Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network. For the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews, press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Anatomy of a Movie here on Popcorn Talk. That music, I don't know if you know it, but it's Fantastic Four. And that's the movie we're dissecting today. Aw, man. This is the latest superhero blockbuster where the story behind the production is actually more interesting than the movie itself.
I would watch that movie. I would watch a movie about Josh Trank versus Fox.
It's probably Entourage 2.
It's more like Josh Trank versus Fox versus Miles Teller versus Kate Mara.
And no, I think the two of them are probably, it's probably Kate Mara and Miles Teller, what is happening around us?
The end of the world.
Well, there you go. That's our little teaser for today's show. We have Zach Wilson joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
He is our Marvel expert. As much of an expert as it gets, around here at least. Sarah Stratton.
On this panel, for sure.
Hello, Sarah Stratton.
Hello.
And I'm Phil Svitek, and we're the trio.
We're the trio.
We'll come
of
up with a name by the end.
I don't know how to go about
the terrific three.
Well, let's start with this, right? So, you know, there's this movie.
just that sums it up right there.
This movie, across the board, critics and audiences hated it first and foremost, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's, we're going to make no...
we're going to try and break down scientifically why this movie did not appeal to audiences or critics. I don't think you can really play the blame game because no one's taking credit for how this movie turned out.
But one thing's for sure. I mean, if you read both timelines, both movies, whether you go with Fox's or Josh's, would have sucked. That's just the consensus that everyone has come to, and we're going to tell you why.
Well, I don't know. I guess we'll break it down. Like, it could be that either one of them would have been good, but half of each does not come to a good ending.
That's true.
But it comes to a quick ending.
So let's start with I don't want to fully dive into the studio versus Josh just yet, because once we do, that's a can of worms we're not going to be able to come back from. So let's start with general impressions, then we'll talk story, and then we'll slowly get into the controversy.
General impressions. I walked out of this movie and sent a text message to my friend saying, yep, so bad.
Okay. That sums it up for most people.
Yeah.
I felt this the movie had a few things that were good going for it. I thought that the first act was really good. I really loved them as kids.
Oh, this is so exciting. I've been hoping that someone would make me like some part of this movie.
I liked the little kid Reed Richards that we got. That felt like Reed Richards. And I liked him and Ben Grimm as, like, star-crossed. Like, the star-crossed bromance between them was cool. But then it just went south so quickly. It got, the writing got lost. The, like, direction of the movie was just all over the place. My biggest gripe, and we can get into this more in depth later, is that for a superhero movie, which is usually the clearest movies that you're going to get when it comes to who is your villain, this movie had no villain.
But on top of that, it's a superhero origin story where I feel like you're supposed to leave the movie knowing, like, how these characters have developed, how they've become, what we know them to be. Like, the only glimpse of that we got was in the kid portion. Was in, like, the little bit of background that you have with their parents and the science fair and them working together. Besides that, for an origin story, in my opinion, I did not learn enough about any of the characters to really be able to say anything about them besides a sentence. And it was the characters they developed were cheesy, one note, and unbelievable. And it was because I didn't have the time invested to see them grow into what they became besides the kid scene that he mentioned. And then they just, like, the point of view also shifted so many times. I didn't know who I was supposed to be following because they get you invested in Reed's character. From the very get-go, you're like, I was like, okay, let's see what this little boy has to overcome. And then they just, like, skip chunks. And I really don't see him becoming something else. I see, like, the last transition to a new part of his personality.
Yeah.
I don't see the growing to that. Like, we'll get into more story, but that was so hard for me. Because I was like, this is an origin superhero story that has no payoff. Like, if you go into this movie, what do you want to see and what do you get?
I agree with Zach 100%. There was no villain up until the end, and it was just the last 20 minutes. I was like, what is this?
Even at the end, though, like, you have Victor Von Doom, like, arguably one of Marvel's best villains in the arsenal, as, I don't know what, a conduit for the Negative Zone or Planet Zero, as they call it. Like, I couldn't tell if they were trying to say that this was him being Victor. Like, where he's, like...
No, there's no Victor today. Only Doom.
Yeah. But is it Doom, or is it supposed to be the planet talking through him? Or him influenced by the planet? What are his powers? I don't know, but we can defeat them if we just try a little harder.
It's completely
muddled. Because also part of that, when they introduce him off the back, they don't make a line on, like, what has the planet done to him and what has already been in place. Because they do put in lines before he goes to Planet Zero about, like, snide remarks about what they've done to their own world and who deserves what, and, like, this darker side of him that he's already, like, set fire to computers in the back. And they built up, like, these little snippets of he's not a good guy.
Yeah, but he's just, like, angsty Victor Von Doom instead of, like, I am the leader of my own sovereign nation, and I am also more intelligent than anyone on the planet, Victor Von Doom. This is just, like, he's a good scientist with, like, a temper.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt really strange. The whole NASA thing, and with having young kids, kind of exceptional kids, do something that NASA couldn't, and how that played into everything, it just didn't hit, and it was just bad.
To make a successful Fantastic Four Origins movie, what would you have wanted?
Here's the thing. I mean, part of it for me, I don't necessarily care for an origin story all the time. You know, I don't mind if we kind of get really into it and just have a great villain, and that's to me is a superhero movie. Now, in terms of an origin story, it is about their friendship, but you can develop that friendship and you get to know them as they fight a common enemy. And the movie, for the most part, just didn't have a goal or direction. You know, it just almost seemed like a slice of life movie.
Yeah, one of the main facets of screenwriting is you have to know what every character wants. That's the biggest thing, because it drives everything else, even within a scene. What does each person that's there want? And if they don't have anything they want, they shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. So, what does Sue Storm want in this movie? I have no idea. Like, to do science?
Read. Listen to music. Yeah. Listen to patterns of music.
Discover the patterns of the world.
I like she wants to do read, because there's two great meanings behind that.
Moving on.
And what does Reed Richards want? He wants to get to the Negative Zone, and he does, or gets. He wants to, like, make this achievement.
But that's, like, also, like, muddled with. He also wants to, like, save his friendship with Ben, and also, like, at one point, all of his research make work, and...
Well,
like,
that's the thing, is that he has the science from the start. Mm-hmm. He's already achieved it.
Yeah.
And then they're just bringing him into the Baxter... The Baxter Foundation.
Yeah.
I was like, it's not the Baxter Building, which is where they live in the comics, is the Baxter Building. It's not that. He achieves it within the first 30 minutes. So once he's there, what is his want? Is it to, they get there? We know he's going to get there. He already
did it.
Well,
now it's the credit. I mean, one can argue, I mean, that's what Victor was pushing him towards.
He finds out something more about the science he's created, and it's, like, to expand the knowledge and to, like, he saw a window that was this big and then found out it wasn't just the Sahara or whatever. It was this whole other world. So it's expanding his science.
It's making that applicable towards something. You could make the greatest invention if it doesn't do anything, but, like, make light beams.
That was the thing. It's, like, this idea of, like, well, we're going to get over there. We're going to find a new renewable energy source. That's so vague and dull. If it was that he discovered this and then realized that this was going to be the ultimate weapon that the government was going to be wielding, that's a tired storyline, but at least that's, like, a thing to work against.
Yeah.
Now it's just, like, there's a reason we don't have movies about, like, laboratory science, because it's dull. Like, scientific discovery is usually a boring thing. Like, even if it's the coolest thing about our
Unless
universe...
there's a conflict.
Yeah, there's no conflict in scientific discovery. Unless there's an outside force. And I didn't have an outside force for him to fight against.
Except for the fact that all along as an audience, you know that Doom is coming back. Which isn't something the characters are really fighting against. It's something that the audience knows. And so you're just waiting the whole movie, and you end up waiting... What is it? You ate like an hour and 25 minutes?
But that's where someone like me...
get the villain that you already know is coming. So you're not as invested, at least for me, I wasn't invested in the problems of the astronauts coming in and being the first men, or the government, or the project being taken away from them. Because I knew all along that this isn't the problem that they're going to be facing. So all of those things feel minor, because... the audience is already keyed into who the villain is.
But
so you're just waiting and waiting and waiting for a fight that then is horribly anticlimactic and doesn't live up to the hour and 20 minutes you waited for the villain that they told you about literally in, like, scene 3.
For me, I was kind of wondering how the Fantastic Four would shape up. That whole pivotal scene, it felt so weirdly crowbarred because, you know, you have... Susan Storm not a part of it, and then it was like, how is she gonna get these powers? And it's like, okay, here's a convoluted way of making it happen that I'm sure what any feminist is like, what the hell, people, can't you just make a fifth pod for her or something? I've seen the trailers, but I'm not familiar with the whole Fantastic... I've seen the first Fantastic Four. I have not seen Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. So I'm not quite familiar with Victor and all that. And so I was figuring out, how is he going to play into it? Now, I knew that eventually, because I'm a wrestling fan, that there would be a heel turn on Victor. But at the same time, I was wondering how it would happen and progress. And I don't think it was warranted. I really don't.
His turn to evil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you let yourself believe that the madness he's gone through for this year has been infected with this Planet Zero energy, and it's taken, like, the seed of an idea that was in him and made that an all-consuming thought. But, like, you have to reach that as an audience member without the direction of without a director leading it to. I had to be coming up with reasons for all of the characters because they weren't believable.
But from a science, you know, this the planet became our savior of, like, we're going to use this planet to save our own planet. But it should have been very much, okay, this is the world's most dangerous planet. We cannot go here. Please, like, we have to pull out, you know, and there's danger coming. Like, you know, now that we've opened this gateway, oh my God, they're going to start taking over our world.
Yeah, or they could have known that Victor survived and gotten something back and realized how dangerous the planet was, and it was a team-building thing that they wanted to go back and save him.
Yeah.
Like, as a team growing together, and like fighting the opposing force of the government and everyone trying to keep them out, because that would have strengthened your bond between characters.
That's a great idea.
Like, and gone back, and then it's their own worst enemy.
And they get there, and Victor's been corrupted, abandoned, and he deflects all of that hate and, like, just the fury of being left on a dead world by himself at our four heroes. Instead, we just, like, Victor, like, is just, like, there, and he's mad.
Yeah.
About, like, vaguely the environmental problems of our planet.
It felt weirdly... One of my pet peeves was the weirdly collegey thing of, like, you know what? F NASA. Let's get drunk and do it ourselves.
Like, for me, why? My pet peeve from the movie, like, I understand, like, that's the motivation for some of the smartest people in who we're supposed to believe the world to go to this other planet without any type of supervision or plan back. Like, developed Reed and other characters to seem to have fail-safes. Like, they had no backup plan if Sue wasn't there. There was no safety involved, and it was just on the point of they had a couple of drinks.
I want to do a quick, because SerenityQ26 in the chat roll liked the movie.
Interesting.
And he didn't turn evil. He was already evil. If you paid attention to the film, it's obvious he has a criminal past. Plus, the power was an addiction. And yes, it's clear that he did have this, like, darker past where he burned the thing because he didn't like what they did to him. But we didn't see that. Mm-hmm. That was my problem with it, is we didn't see it. We were told, oh, he's got emotional. He's unstable. But I didn't see him be unstable ever, except when he got drunk and, like, made a bad decision.
And they also weren't completely, in my opinion, I mentioned that I did think they showed a darker side to him. They didn't flesh out his character enough. They added, which I suppose we didn't see this whole plot line, but they added this weird older type of a romantic relationship or crush or something between Victor and Sue.
That made sense to me. It's something that connects with the comic books. Like, Doom does, like, right now in this weird alternate crazy world that Secret Wars is in. I'm not even gonna get started on that, but they're together in the comics now because it's an alternate sort of semi-alternate reality. But
the story they create in this movie, the love line between Victor Von Doom and Sue Storm has no arc. It has no through line. It starts with a couple of little mentions in the beginning where it's like, is Sue going to be there? She's the only one I trust. And then the next time we see them basically talking, he's like, and now I'm going to kill you because we could never be together. Like,
and we see him like we see him a little bit jealous when he's like, you're acting unprofessional.
It's just the most, like, if there was an arc of story, this is just horrible. Like, let's just pick little bits. Like, they should have cut that out completely.
Well, you would imagine, I mean, I hate those sort of cliched storylines because you can imagine, I mean, at the end of the day, if Sue and Victor are working together, like, there has to be at least a friendship. You know what I mean? And in that regard, you could potentially, like, okay, if there's a friendship, there could be potential for love. Or at least mistakenly from Victor's perspective.
My biggest pet peeve with this movie is because I was trying to find something I liked.
You know what? One of the things that Franklin Storm's voice. That was phenomenal. That's the best thing in the movie, I will say.
He's great. But that's not what I was going to say. I was going to speak about how, for me, I didn't know where the focus was of what they were aiming for this movie. Because if you had a movie that had not the most believable characters, but had fantastic action, suspense, I know that's your goal. To me, that's what, like, Jurassic World did. I was entertained. Mm-hmm. It was high energy. It was what I wanted from a dinosaur movie. It wasn't the end of the world that, to me, their characters weren't the most believable. In this, the characters weren't believable. And then on top of that, I didn't get the fulfillment of the action. And then on top of that, I was like, okay, well, maybe they're going to grasp the science behind Fantastic Four, and they're going to really gravitate to making all these things seem accurate and pay attention to the little, like, scientific details and them increasing their powers or making their suits and being very focused on, like, the details of what makes Fantastic Four function. And that wasn't even covered. Like, I just didn't know what they wanted me to see in this story.
Yeah, there was something... I think, Phil, you asked the question before, what do we want to see in a Fantastic Four movie?
She did, but yes.
Or whoever it... Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sarah, yes. I didn't... I would have started it out with just them already with their powers, and look at how the Incredible Hulk did it, where they had, like, an opening credit sequence, or, like, with, like, news footage and, like, little snippets, where... That got all of the information we needed about their origin story through, because people are familiar with the Fantastic Four. And this character, unlike some others, like with the Hulk, the Hulk's origin story, how he gets created, is a huge piece of who that character is. It informed, mm-hmm. The idea of a scientific mistake causing his powers and the rage that's behind it, that colors who he is as a character.
Mm-hmm.
How the Fantastic Four got their powers is almost irrelevant, because in this one we got what's from the Ultimate Comics storyline, where they go into a different dimension and they get the powers that way, versus the original story where they go into space and they just get their powers. It doesn't matter. It's this was fine. Like, okay, the fire breaks through and so he's the Human Torch. The rocks get attached to him, so he's the Thing. They didn't really expand on that, why Mr. Fantastic was rubbery, but...
Well, he was trying to pull the door in.
Is that...
That's what happened.
I didn't know if it was exactly that, or it was when he was reaching for Victor Von Doom and his arm was, like, moving.
But, like, the other two, like, I get, like, okay, the element was combined with the travel.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he was, like, holding a piece of rubber... my point is that, like, how they got their powers isn't what makes the Fantastic Four fun and interesting. It's the dynamics between the characters.
Yeah.
And the dynamics between these characters that make them fun to watch, we got for maybe 3 minutes at the very end of the movie.
Because the whole Johnny Storm, Fast and Furious scene, we didn't need it. Yes, I get you're trying to introduce this character, but again, why? And I think, you know, one of the things that in TV-wise that I think really works really well, you know, they tell you, okay, when you're writing your pilot, write out your story, and then once you get to episode 4, there's your pilot. You know what I mean? Because you start in the middle of action and get it going. Stop with the whole, here's what we have to explain. I think too many people over-explain with these superhero movies. I don't think it's necessary all the time.
The racing scene didn't bother me. Like, I didn't stand out and be like, oh, why did that mean?
Yeah, I think I actually could say I liked it.
But what it did is it opened a window for me to think I was going to get to know these characters a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't fulfilled. Because that, to me, was where he started. I got to see the snippet of this unsatisfied son who was racing in the streets. And then very promptly after that scene, he's immediately invested in the research.
Because of the
very
bromance.
Very quickly.
that was literally it. They kept trying to high-five or a slight, you know, and that was funny in itself. But
and then the next thing I felt I was really seeing from that character was him being like, I want to go into war because I want to be important, Dad.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I understand elements of it. I can see the arc that they were trying to create. But it just felt like they were giving me bullet points and not letting me see the transformation.
It wasn't an arc because there was never really a fight against, like, doing something important. It mm-hmm. was just a kid who has a ton of talent but doesn't feel fulfilled doing, like, that's not what makes him feel alive. Like, mm-hmm. everyone looks for in real life, everyone is looking for the job or, like, the thing in the world that makes them feel alive and, like, special and, like, they're calling.
And loved.
And for him, like, engineering, even though he was really good at it, wasn't his thing. But racing, that, like, flying through the streets, that he loved. You could tell that he enjoyed mm-hmm. that and he liked being good at it. And that was great because that's Johnny Storm. Like, the idea of just zooming around, like, being a badass. Like, that's great. But, like, he was sort of, like,
he was on board for joining the research. Like, he was for someone who seemed so unhappy with his father and what he was trying to be channeled to do, to jump in to that channel felt too quick to me, too forced. And then it makes the decision for him to be part of the army or the military not hold weight, because he jumped into something else so easily that him jumping into this just transfers as like, oh, he was a disgruntled teenager who will say yes to every new opportunity, mm-hmm. which I don't think is how that works.
Yeah, if he had been like, sort of reluctant about doing the engineering, but he's still doing it, and like, but then him and Reed sort of started to mm-hmm. bond a little bit,
and then
that would have been...
And then he does find what he really wants, like...
Yeah.
That's much more interesting than someone who's like, I'm not gonna do what you say, Dad. I'm doing what you say. I'm happy about it. I'm giving all my effort. Oh, and this new idea, I'm gonna give all my effort to that, too. Like, it's...
Yeah,
just isn't built.
I get what you're saying. So let's start with let's kind of go into how this came into being from before the full Josh and Fox
debacle.
Transition, and dating back to 2009. Do you guys, Zach? Do you know the full story, Sarah?
I know,
and I know you
most
in particular.
Of it, but yeah,
I mean, so in 2009, they announced that there would be another Fantastic Four. It was with completely different actors and producers, but. But then kind of in 2012 was when it really started to take shape. And, Josh was hired as director and Jeremy Slater was hired as screenwriter. And that's when it really started to take shape.
Mm-hmm.
Josh said he wanted to kind of ground it a little bit more in reality type of thing.
Yeah, and I don't mind grounding it. I think that in fantasy stuff like this, that can be fun, especially with like a more science-based group like the Fantastic Four. Ground it all you want, but you don't need it to be dark like this.
Also, this wasn't grounded.
No, not at all.
Like, if that was his goal,
well, I would say that it is in a way, because when you say grounded about science fiction, the way I always talk about it, it's the one big leap of faith with science mm-hmm. and the way that the world works. And that one leap was this negative zone and what it can do to people. So they can travel to this negative zone, and then it gives them powers. That's the one thing. So I'll grant them that scientifically it wasn't like super out there. It wasn't just like they magically got powers. They did try to explain it at least a little bit.
I guess, but if that to me is your goal, and I think I tried to say this earlier, not well, is if your foundation is the science,
mm-hmm.
and that's how they started. They started really with the science that you can bake in a garage, you can do the parts for, like, you grow that as soon as they made the leap. The detail to science, the focus on science, got completely pushed aside so that it wasn't a through line. Because if you were going to do that, and if that's going to be, like, so much of your film is rooted in how these characters get invested on how things are made, how things are done, like, what makes things tick, that is how the first couple scenes operate. But then you go over, yes, leap of faith, new world, you come back, you don't see the science behind their powers or what they're doing, you don't see the science behind their containment suits. Things like the fact that Sue Storm has to hold her breath to levitate an orb or whatever gets completely left out by the end as she's creating force fields around everything. They don't stick with the science.
Yeah.
Because when that leap of faith didn't turn into just a leap of faith for me. Because we're signing up for the Fantastic Four. I'm expecting a leap of faith. But then I want the scientists to show me how they're controlling these powers. Show me what they're discovering. Show me about the energy that they're looking for. The product, the result of the science they've created. It was, we have scientists who in the end, I don't see doing science. And that bothers me.
So, I mean, in terms of being able to attribute that to anyone, eventually Simon Kinberg was hired to, co-write the movie. Seth Smith was hired to polish up the script. And in terms of what Simon was going for, he wanted to go for a celebration of all the Fantastic Four comics, the notion of a dysfunctional surrogate family of scientists that come together, and this idea that it's almost like a science adventure than a superhero movie. That was his goal. It just seemed like, even from the script phase, that there was just too many ideas going into what it should be rather than one solid idea. And, you know, kind of, have you guys seen Chronicle?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And obviously that's, you know, Josh did that for Fox, and so, you know, they were happy that they found an in-house director that they could, you know, go up the line with. And I just, part of it is, I don't think he was ready. You know, Chronicle and this were two different things. Huge budget difference from that to this, and you know, and too many kind of people right off the bat.
Well, that was the thing. Chronicle was very grounded. It was because it was more about the characters than the world around them. That may be like the bottom line thing, is that this movie, Fantastic Four, was more about the world than it was about people.
Yeah.
We didn't focus on the people. We focused on their powers and the world around them way more.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, like, feel for Reed at any time. Like, I liked him. I'm like, yeah, Reed's a cool guy. But I'm not, like, especially, like, I don't feel for him. I don't feel sad for him or excited for him or anything like that. Like, he escapes, but, like, not for, like, he just because he's scared, and then, like, they can't get in touch with him for a year.
Yeah.
And, like, where was he for a year? Why was nothing? If you're going to have him leave for a year, why was that? Like, there has to be a really good reason that he was gone, or, like, what he was doing in that time.
Agreed.
That was overall.
Agreed. And, like,
side.
They try and make it seem like he's creating a singular shuttle to go to No Zero Zone so he can just cure Ben. But that never gets told to Ben. We never get to see any resolution of their friendship on a deeper level other than, like, well, we're going to fight together for a minute. Like, that has now been also Ben's job for the whole time. Like, they didn't have this conversation between supposedly our strongest relationship in the whole movie to resolve a year of absence.
And you could have, one of the more missed things for me was you had Johnny Storm and his friendship with Reed versus Ben, and the tug of war there that could have happened. Because, you know, I mean, how many times have we seen the new friend versus the old friend? It's like, dude, you know, but the old friend just perhaps couldn't keep up. And yet in this scenario, you have the greatest thing ever where they're drunk and Ben could have been like, are you serious? Again, that could have been a huge conflict of, like, I get it. You guys are smart, but, like, you're also drunk out of your minds.
You're also idiots. And, like, they get over there and immediately they're like, yeah, we're just going to go for 5 minutes so that we can be the first ones. And then they start going on a scientific expedition, like, down and away from the thing. For the smartest guy, I don't care how drunk you are. Like, an unmotivated, like, dumb move. Like, this is a case where I, as a viewer, I know that these characters are smarter than that. I expect these characters to be smarter than that, because I want, like, give your audience faith that they're not just going to go along with, like, a dumb decision. That was the movie, like, well, we've got to get them in trouble. And the cliff could have just collapsed on its own. That would have been enough trouble. You don't have to make them, like, do something, make a bad decision.
So let me
like
ask, was Fox's motive, speaking of motives, was Fox's motive going into this right? I mean, they have the rights, and if they didn't make this movie, they would lapse.
Yeah.
But it's like, why make a movie just because of the fear of that versus let's make a movie because we want to make a movie?
Because they think, I mean, I hate to be this guy because I'm actually usually a supporter of studios because I think that a good studio can do a lot of good, can make good movies. I look at what Disney's done with a lot of their different properties. Even Fox with X-Men and Deadpool looks like they're on the right track by and large. There are exceptions to that, but, like, they've made a lot of good decisions too.
Mm-hmm.
But this was very clearly the studio saying, this is a big money property. We don't want to give it back to Disney because Fox versus Disney and they're butting heads. So we're going to make this movie just to keep the rights. That's what this was. This was the, it was the Amazing Spider-Man with Sony again. It was, we're going to lose the rights. We don't need to make this movie, but we're going to do it anyway so that we can prevent the other company from making money.
But it's just, you know, if you have it, I, you know, that to me, and I'm sure they didn't, I'm sure they wanted to make a good movie. Obviously everyone wants to make a good movie, but at the end of the day, like when you're making a movie out of fear of losing rights versus an intrinsic, hey, this could be a great movie. There's a flaw there.
Yeah, and I think that... But they did give them... I think they set up to make a good movie. Like, pulling in Trank, although we know that that's fallen apart, I thought, from the start, would have been a good idea. Being that he had Chronicle had a certain audience. Then with the casting, I think that they targeted actors who are... up and coming. A lot of people have a lot of faith in them. Bringing, I mean, Miles Teller after the year he had last year. Mara with House of Cards. Like, they were bringing in different audiences, and I think they were trying to structure a diverse and popular cast.
Well, that was the most interesting part.
So wasn't they, like, just threw the biggest names they could think of in well, the air?
Michael B. Jordan... He's obviously in Chronicle, and that was the connection there. Believe it or not, and we'll talk about the, you know, Josh really liked Miles Teller. Mm-hmm. That relationship apparently really went south to where they almost fought.
Him and Kate Mara, like, both, like, apparently just did not get along with Trank.
Yeah, but he, Josh never liked Kate to begin. He did not want her.
He didn't.
But at least, like, Michael B. Jordan and Miles Teller, he really wanted for
the
movie.
He fought for them to be on the project versus supposedly Kate was put on by the studio.
Interesting.
And supposedly he never treated her well, like, straight off the back. Versus he was the one who brought Miles Teller on, mm-hmm. and then they started butting heads. But also, speaking of Kate, because we were talking about relationships before, I did not believe that they were brother and sister for a minute, even adoption-wise.
No, there was 1 minute where I thought
one
that
minute?
They, the moment, there's that one moment where they sort of, like, are goading each other in the lab. I can't remember exactly what they said, but there was, like, a camaraderie that, like, I saw, but it, like, went away
it
pretty quick.
It just wasn't.
And, like, there was a... I get there was a lot of controversy about the decision to, like, have the Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, see, that doesn't bother me at all. Like,
it didn't. It didn't bother me. I'm not saying that, but there was... But, like, it would be... Like, we have to at least mention that, like, there was... A like nerd blow up on the online, or I should say, not nerd blow up, a racist blow up when people cast Michael B. Jordan because they're like, oh, they're brother and sister. How can they be different races? Like, you could adopt, or they could have different moms, or different dad, like whatever. Like, make it a good cast. Like, and also the race of these characters does not matter.
Mm-mm. But like for me, the point of them being brother and sister, which is such an influential relationship in a film, wasn't utilized in any way, and we didn't see a strong enough either connection or conflict between them to make that relationship necessary. It could have just as easily been they were classmates, they were friends, they were working together. The implication of them being brother and sister didn't influence anything in the plot, except for the one moment where they're mourning over their dad together, and they don't even bond, it's seemingly, through that.
So let me ask you, this is more for Sarah, but Zach, you can kind of answer. I'm still trying to figure out how the best way to ask this, but basically, Kate really wanted to read the comics, mm-hmm. to get to know the character, and I don't know exactly who, whether it was the studio or who, producers, whatever, said, you know, no need. Don't do it. Would you, A, have kind of gone and done it so you can understand the character? Do you feel that perhaps because she didn't, you know, that was the reason why it's not as well developed, because it doesn't have that depth? Or if she did, it's just the writing.
It makes me mad.
I 100% would have read them even if someone had told me not to. Even, like, acting part aside, because I know there's a lot of actors who, like, can snap into a character without the research. I don't know how they do it, but I know there's ton, everyone has their own methods. So if she was like, I'm not going to, I don't want to get influenced besides anything besides the script because it's an origin story, I've been like, that's weird, but you should read it. But when you enter, this is my point, when you enter into a comic book world, I think you have to realize that there is so much love with these worlds, with these characters. Mm-hmm. The same if you're entering for a historical figure or something. You should be able to relate to the people who want to pay to watch your movie.
Because that's your diehard fan.
And impress and be part of that. Like, it's part of the job.
You well, here's the thing. She wanted to. She was told, don't
you're
do
not
it.
Attached. Yeah, but, and she should. I think she should have not listened and read them anyway. Are they?
I don't know if she
her?
Did or she did not. I don't know that much further.
Was it the studio or
Trank? I don't know.
Here's my take on it. If it's, I disagree with the decision to, to have her not read the comics from the get-go. But if it was Trank that asked her not to read that, I actually would say listen to the director, because there's a reason for that decision. Like, letting the director craft the movie, and that a big part of that is letting the is controlling how the actors approach the characters. That's what a good director does. And so if he wants you to have less information, there's usually a reason for it. I would disagree with that choice in this case, mm-hmm. because of what you're saying. Like, these are beloved characters. But if I'm saying from her perspective, I would say, yes, listen to your director. Don't listen to the studio. That's a dumb thing. Because the thing is, even if you're going to make a different decision, if you're not going to go with the character as we know it, that should be an informed decision. Because your audience is coming in with an established understanding of this person and this character. This isn't a brand new character.
And any differences you create between the character you're putting on film and what an audience already knows from the comics or whatnot should be conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think even if you were trying to go a different route or put them through different actions, I think that it should be specific enough that you should know, oh, this isn't in the history of the character, but it fits this world. And consciously be able to defend that and stand by it. I think it also makes everything stronger because it's more specific on like why you're doing things. And I'm sure there are decisions that could have been, if she didn't read them, better informed by the comics.
Yeah.
Although as a character that they created, I don't think they really gave her a ton of room to show any type of acting chops.
I don't know who this Sue Storm really was, except her relationship to the men around her. I know that she was very into the science and she was very devoted to it, but that was really it. I didn't get anything else about who she was. Nothing.
No.
Well, some of that's writing, and you know, I mean, as this thing has unfolded with Josh, you know, there's been multiple accounts where crew members have come up and they've said, like, it's bad enough when you give someone a line reading as an actor of, like, hey, I want you to read it this way. But he was literally telling them how to breathe and stuff like that. Like, that's literally one of the quotes that cast members have said.
Oh, my God. That's the...
And so whatever performance that you're seeing, and you have to wonder, okay, like, yes, the script might have been bad, but you directed them literally how to breathe and which points.
That's Hitchcock, and it only works for... That's, like, the only director who can do that is Hitchcock. Josh Trank, you are not Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, and on top of that, I'm just thinking about Sue Storm's character. And if anything, she should be the glue that holds this film together. Not only is she one of the only women featured in the entire movie, but her supposed father is involved, her brother is involved, her some sort of ex something, and one of her and Reed, who people assume has a future with her.
Was there another woman in this movie? I'm like trying to think of a single other.
Not really. I'll look through IMDb.
The mother.
Let's see. Miles,
of Reed.
Michael, Kate Mara.
Did we even see her though?
Yeah, I remember, because when the failed science experience, and also in the
page one, and I've only got Kate,
and also in the Grimm auto body,
we met his mom.
Yeah, because she slaps the brother.
That was it.
Yeah. A lot of them.
Yeah, and I have a gripe about that whole scene with his brother and mom. But while we're still on casting, I didn't mind the overall casting in this. Like, I liked with Jamie Bell, right?
Yes,
as Grimm. I liked him as like the before Grimm. I thought they could have done a little bit more voice modulation. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like it wasn't there. It wasn't. It didn't have the deepness that I expected.
It didn't match well enough.
Yeah, with the what was ultimately a really good character design of the Thing. Like, it looked great.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you inevitably have to compare these two, and you have to know this going in to the movie that was made less than 10, like, what was it, 10 years ago that the first one came out, or 11?
The first one or the second one. I mean,
either way, yeah. you are inevitably going to get compared to the last one. And when I think about, then that movie was not perfect, but I really liked that cast. I thought they were a little bit older than this version, but I really liked that the dynamics that they had between them. There will never be a better Ben Grimm than Michael Chiklis. He just, like, foam rubber suit aside, he was great as the Thing. He just was that character. And Chris Evans, like, he's great as Captain America now, but he was a great Johnny Storm. He was that. He became that character. Like,
yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't feel like the set was conducive to the two, you know, just kind of this organic process. Like, there was a chance meeting between Michael B. Jordan and Chris Evans, and, you know, Michael was asking Chris, hey, can you give me any advice? He's like, I'm not going to tell you anything, because, you know what, just go and have fun with this. You're going to have a blast with this character. And I don't feel like it should almost be treated almost like a comedy in some sort of respect. But like that's what, you know, Avengers, it's so funny because they themselves as characters and I as actors, I imagine, are having so much fun on set. And that's what this should have translated to that, not a very Hitchcockian, like, you're not shooting Psycho here.
Fantastic Four is a fun thing. Like, it's not meant to be dark. This isn't Batman. The Batman is a dark, gritty superhero, so you make a dark, gritty movie. Daredevil is a dark, gritty character, so you make a dark and gritty show. Fantastic Four, Watchmen. But Fantastic Four is a light, like, thing. It's funny. It, like, your main character, like, one of your main characters says, it's clobberin' time, which is a silly line, which they destroyed the silliness of that line in this movie. When you take what is his catchphrase that is, like, supposed to be fun and he enjoys saying,
like, and an make abusive
it,
memory,
yeah, of a thing that his abusive brother used to say to him, not a character, mind you, that we, like, sort of reluctantly liked. Like, he was like, I pick on you because, like, I need to show off in front of my friends, but, like, I really love you, little brother. No, he was just beat up and picked on by his older brother until his mom had to step in.
And his mom, who was also abusive.
Yeah. And, like, all of the fun of that line is gone by, like, the time he says it.
And you don't want him to say it by the time he says it.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable when he says it. Because you're like, are you a bully now? Is the Thing a bully?
Well, he's changed as well from years and years of being in the armed services.
1 year.
That's true. A year of being in the armed services.
Also, and put some pants on, Thing. I know you don't have anything. There's only just, like, one big rock down there where there should be something, but it just looked weird. I don't know. Were you guys bothered by it at all?
Well, I was focused on, like, how wide set his eyes were. And I was like, why are your eyes so wide set? If there's this face set, like, so.
His very skinny Jamie Bell face.
That's what I kept picturing. Because I was like, it was done really well. But I kept picturing, like, Jamie Bell face. I was like, your eyes would be so tiny. And it's like, giant rock.
Yeah, I mean, part this was the first thing that's ever been made. I forget if it's 100% visual effects, but, you know, in the past, it's been kind of a combination of prosthetics and whatever else. This was just more visual effects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, pants-wise, it might be too much to draw in pants as well. That's what I'm thinking.
I feel like if making a thing of multiple rocks move would be way more difficult than a pair of pants where you can literally, like, have somebody run down the hall and see how it moves.
Well, yeah, you'd be surprised.
Also, I'm going to overanalyze it now. Like, if you go into the real world here of the Thing, there's a lot of stuff that you can put in pants or a jacket. Like, maybe he doesn't need it in terms of, like, hiding anything or body armor, but, like, if you're gonna send him into war zones, you could make a giant gun for the thing to hold and give him a holster.
Crevices. He has crevices. You can just put them in.
Like, where is he gonna keep his cell phone?
In one of his many
crevices.
I don't
think he needs a cell phone.
But you just yell? Like, when he need, if, let's say he goes on a mission and
how
it goes sour.
How would he be
sour.
Able to use a cell phone?
I mean, you have to make a thing phone. But, like, just realistically, from an army perspective, if, let's say he drops into a mission and it goes sour, if he has nothing on him to radio in to a drop point or anything, he's just going to have to walk.
But he is 100% successful.
Yeah.
So, it's fine.
Yeah, no, it works. It's the same argument of when someone tells you, I'm never late, except the day that they're late.
Yeah. And I get that I'm nitpicking here, and I'm just like I'm like looking for problems. But when you actively take away a very well known costume and like make a character naked, I'm gonna ask the question, like,
why?
Where are his pants?
My question: where is the action?
Yeah, that's
yes. I couldn't find it.
Fair enough.
Where is the good dialogue?
There
are a few lines in this movie that just were like, I think I let out like audible sighs during the movie. We're not gods, we're people. Like, you want to talk about like smooth lines we have heard 50 times since the 80s. He's not stronger than any of us. Yeah, but he's not. Or he's stronger than any of us. He's not stronger than all of us.
Yeah.
What was the...
But, like, their powers were when they conjoined them in any type of way. Like, how they overcame... like, how a thing bursted out of the other rocks.
Yeah, we overcame...
And how...
We overcame an undefined set of powers because we worked together.
But, again, if the movie had a little bit room for comedy, then that could have been a very funny line of, like, yeah, okay, I get that he's tough. But all of us,
yeah,
we could do it.
The worst one though was for me when Franklin Storm died. And keep in mind, this is a character who at the beginning of this movie is literally touted for how good he is at giving motivational speeches. They make a point of discussing how good he is at speeches, and his last words to his children are, promise me, look after each other. That's it.
And then they don't.
Well, they're working on it.
Not a thing.
Yeah, they're working on it. But, like, that's the best he, like, this master orator could come up with.
He was dying. Give him a break.
I'm just, the script.
I was surprised he could even talk. No one else seemed to be able to.
Yeah, it's like the Dumb and Dumber thing. Not if you count the gurgling sound. Those were his last words.
Oh, my goodness.
And I get that this line is more iconic, but it just sounded really funny when Doom just goes, there is no victor. And all I'm thinking is, there is only Zool!
Yeah. Yeah, when they said that line, it was what it was.
Yeah, just knowing what you have to, when you're crafting a movie, you have to know how your audience is going to take every line, every moment. You have to understand, and like sci-fi nerds are going to hear, there is no name, there is only blank, and it's going to conjure up Ghostbusters if shouted in a movie.
Yeah.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah. Well, poor Fantastic Four. What will it do for all of these people's careers?
I think
that'll
be fine.
I think Miles Teller's going to be fine because he did a great job. Kate Mara's already going to be great.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so I want to talk about Kate Mara.
Josh Trank's
that's good. The actors, I think, will all do fine.
Yeah.
Like, none of them had outstanding performances, but I really don't blame them
because
they had horrible dialogue and...
They all all have track records to this point.
Let me ask you, because Kate Mara in particular, right? This poor woman... The biggest note about her acting is being made about the wig that she wore for reshoots.
Yeah.
And it's like,
an
oh.
awful wig.
And she must, I can't imagine what's even going through her head because, you know, whether she said it on set of like, guys, this doesn't match.
Honestly.
Or whatever.
I think that I have no idea what they're saying. Like, I don't know how anyone took this because the signs were bad, especially when we all found out that none of the actors had seen it until like the premiere, and it was like being hidden from them or whatnot. But if the rumors are true, and they were all treated horribly on set, and everything's happened, the only thing that would be going through my head is, why is this being greenlit for another one? Because I would have been like,
well, before I don't want to dive into that just yet.
I would be trying to run. That's where my mind would be.
I don't want to dive into that just yet. Just yet. Wait. Okay. We're still containing this bomb. Because we will explode eventually, I promise. But let's kind of, so they were initially supposed to shoot in Canada. That got, Louisiana, for those of you who don't know, now just has huge tax incentives, and every movie on earth
goes to Louisiana.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's like Louisiana or Vancouver. Those are the two places you film nowadays.
Indeed. And, so the reason I bring that up is, there's reports where, again, just kind of abuse from Josh, where he just ransacked his he was staying at a place, and it supposedly cost $100,000 for him to stay there. He caused $100,000 worth of damage. That's what it was.
Whoa,
gosh!
Which I don't like. How do you do that?
I don't even. Yeah, what is like? You have to like. In my mind, you
have to destroy a pool, like
you. Like, you have to like knock
a whole
out
backyard.
You have to drink every drink in the minibar.
Except that this wasn't a hotel, it was a house.
Like a support wall. Like, you have to collapse a large chunk of the house.
Or there's really expensive art.
Well, part of it was, there are reports that he damaged photographs of this landlord's family. And that's something like, if you don't have copies of these photos.
That's just messed up.
Well, like, supposedly it was his dogs, right? Wasn't there something along those lines?
Yeah.
Like, his dogs, like, ruined, like, furniture.
It's all
so.
Rumors. I feel like we're, like, just piling on to this guy at this point.
Well, okay.
I do want to talk about what's going to happen to him. Because I think the starting point is when he came out. Yes, he's had problems. He fought for actors. He had problems with the studio. But what really, to me, was the tipping point was when he sent out that tweet. About,
I wouldn't have sent, like, forget what you, you know, and there was an article about four directors that kind of went against their movie, mm-hmm. which one of them was, this one's kind of almost a no-brainer, Joel Schumacher for Batman and Robin. This one's kind of interesting, Tony Kaye for American History X, which American History X is regarded as phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the fact that he disliked it is weird. David Fincher for Alien 3 and Sam Raimi for Spider-Man 3, which those make sense. But, I wouldn't have done it.
I mean, I have to also look into, I don't know where those movies stood on those directors' filmography, like timeline. But
was the first one for David Fincher.
Trank was very young. He got really strong reviews for Chronicle, and he got a big budget movie with a huge studio and sent out a tweet that ruins your relationships with studios, ruins your relationship with your own movie, makes you seem immature, irresponsible, and when you try and shut down all the blame, like, I'm sorry, I partially blame you. Like, they
yeah, because
were able
the negative
to make
effect.
This movie out of the footage you shot and you directed. Like, you are not absolved.
And it opens
from
up
this.
More wormholes, right? So he was about to direct the standalone Star Wars, and he's no longer doing that. So it opens up the question whether or not it's true. The question now lingers of like, well, why did you get fired from that?
I mean, all the quotes that I saw was that like basically there were rumors from behind the scenes at Fox that he was behaving erratically and he wasn't reliable, that he was like very hot-headed, and Disney is just sort of like, we don't need that. We don't want that. This yeah. Disney is a much more like everything that I understand about the way that Disney works on their franchises is that it's much more collaborative between the studios and their filmmakers and their artists. And like they work together. It's not a, here's a check, go use your talent and make this movie. And that's not the guy that Josh Trank is.
Well, you know, part of it is, I don't know if you guys know the, you know, I was reading an interesting article about the history of Fox where the last president, Tom, and forgive me, I forget his last name. I'll try to find it if I can. But just to continue the story. So, you know, they were known for, you know, studio versus director type stuff. And, you know, so So to combat their image as a studio, I think they went that let him kind of go a little bit longer than perhaps they would have in the past because of this negative reputation within the business. And that's what kind of ultimately blew up in their faces as well.
Fox, you're saying?
Fox, yeah. Because, yeah, okay. Again, they were known for being not so director-friendly as a studio. Mm-hmm. At least from their what I'll call the Tom era, according to the article.
The thing is, we'll never know the absolute full story. I mean, his relationship with the studio could have been anywhere from they tried to make 1,000 decisions for him and he had to give them rights, to they tried to make one decision and in hotheadedness he blew up and was like, make your own movie. We don't know the spectrum of how the fighting happened, of who was pushing for how much, if people just started being like, well, you take over because I'm not going, like, if he was like, if you're not giving me full creative control, I want no creative control. We don't know the spectrum of who was really pushing for what. And we never will. All we know is that a fairly new and young director who had a strong record has now sent out a tweet the week before his movie releases, or a couple days before, not standing behind it.
Yeah, and here's
you can't say one movie is a strong record, though. Was a good movie, but it doesn't show a history of good movies. So that's what I will argue there.
That is true, especially because I don't know his other stuff, except for he did the Kill Point TV series as a writer-director, and
whether or not he was right or wrong, I will say it was the dumbest thing he could have possibly done to send that tweet. And that's what I will say. Again, whether or not Fox was right or wrong, never.
Mm-hmm.
Should have done that.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, getting out, it unquestionably hurt the box office, because I was, even as a big superhero fan, big fan of Marvel properties, I was lukewarm on this movie. I was not in a rush to see it. I actually forgot for a little, like, that week that it was coming out. I'm usually, like, really anticipating. I'm, like, waiting for the weekend. I'm like, oh, can't wait to see this movie. I forgot until Friday that it was coming out. And him, like, seeing that tweet come out, it was more of like a, oh, well, I'm not going to, like, go out of my way. I'm not going to move things to go see this. I'll see it when I, like, during the week when I can.
Yeah.
And for a marketing campaign that created such, like, lukewarm responses, that his tweet made so many people not go see it.
And yeah. I think, I mean, I don't know if this is
it didn't just affect, like, a small part. It was like people were hyped and were like, oh, no. Like,
it probably lost, like, $10 million.
That's what people are saying. And I don't know if that's, like, hyperbole for the sake of it or, you know, again, now it's just a question of, did he cause a $10 million loss? Did he not?
It's impossible to say. Like, it's impossible to know what would have happened if he had not sent that tweet. Because it's hard to say how many people even were aware of that, like, of the general public. Like, we're like tuned into this stuff, and like the comic book fans are tuned in, but
that's your
I don't
audience.
Know that the jet. Well, I don't know, but you're but to make that money to actually make all of like the whatever $50 million they were hoping for, that needs a general public to go see it that isn't as like isn't paying as much attention to Deadline or Hollywood Reporter and stuff.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I just out of my own curiosity, I looked up like kind of overall what $50 million equates to actual people, somewhere in the 4 million people range. Just FYI, I found that intriguing.
That's fun. That's interesting.
No, because so I always just like $50 million. Like, how many people is that?
That's I mean, $12 a ticket. That's adds up.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. But I was just kind of curious about number.
I've never thought about it before, but it almost seems underwhelming when you say it like that.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, oh, that's like a normal TV show on TV.
That sounds like a lot of people to me. I think that for Mr. Trank, I don't know if how he feels about the tweet that he sent out. But I think that the next move he's going to have to make, the next movie he gets to make, is huge
His
career.
I don't know if it's better for him to take some time out of the limelight, or if he should, or the opposite, if it's better to like get an indie script and go make it as quick as possible before people like forget who you are.
Because most likely you're not going to have a ton of luck getting a studio to back you, and you better put something out with quality, because you've just put a huge fit about how a bad movie isn't your responsibility, then you have to show people that what you create is great, and you can create another great movie, and you're not going to probably be able to do that with the studio supporting you. So yeah, you probably do need to do it quickly.
I think part of, you know, I would say go make a movie as quickly as possible, and whoever is kind of backing you, your argument, and only if you believe it, you know, hey, this time, no intervention from you guys. Here's the movie that we want to make. I can deliver, you know, I don't need a big budget. It can't be, I can't absolutely, no big budget thing, and like $5 million max, I would say, and just go and make that movie.
And now, then really hope that people like it.
Yeah. Now, part of it is, I think there's going to be a ton of lawsuits back and forth. I'm sure there's going to be a lawsuit against Fox for defamation of character in some sort of way.
I mean, if it's true that they cost him the Star Wars job, I'm curious if that's like...
He won't be able to back that.
Yeah.
Because that is another studio's action, and you can't affect their opinion, especially if it doesn't seem to be a bias on.
But if you can prove that inside sources spoke in some sort of way to Disney, there's always a way.
I don't think they could prove that, just because all of like his tweet is public knowledge. Like,
but I'm saying he was let go way before that.
I mean, I guess it would be the equivalent of, okay, you've hired a new employee, you call the old company to like just talk, like let's say you have a friend that works for like this guy used to work for. Normally you would call up his references to be like, hey, how was this guy with blah 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 blah, and then when...
But legally, you can't say anything.
Yeah, legally, you cannot.
You can only say, I recommend or I do not recommend.
I don't...
No, trust me, it's the scariest
thing in the world.
You can't give them any details. It's against the law.
Is that true?
Yes.
Very true. You will be sued.
It is discrimination. You can only say, I recommend or I do not recommend.
Which is why if things were told and if things surfaced, then it's, you know, kind of insider source, it's under the table type stuff, and then it's, again, defamation of character.
But the harder thing would probably be... He might have more grounds if he turned down other jobs that he had because he was booked for Star Wars. Because then he could lay their cost against that. Like, he could say, I would have had these if I hadn't been booked for this.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing.
Maybe there, but if overall...
I think there's going to be lawsuits back and forth. I really do.
Yeah,
you just can't avoid this right now.
Yeah. And yet they're making another movie.
So the biggest... Do you recast the entire cast? Do you blame it on them? Do you leave them and just try to make a good movie?
I want to know, are these people suckered in? Like, how many... Like, what is their contract? Like, does anyone know, like, how many movies each person signed on to do?
I mean, there's no way that they're not signed on for at least two more. Like, there's no way Fox would not sign them to a contract for three movies.
It's just a matter of whether or not they want to use them.
Yeah, and a question of like how, like what they would, each side would need to get out of it would be the thing. Because like I'm sure there's a way for them to drop out if they wanted to. I think if you're going to make it, if Fox is actually going to make another one, it better just be a sequel and not another reboot. Like, keep the cast. The cast was not the problem. And like what I saw in those last few minutes, I was like, There's the Fantastic Four. There they are. I haven't seen them for the rest of this movie, but like in those last few minutes where they go to, where they don't say it out loud, but it's basically the Future Foundation, is where they make it clear that's like basically where they are. You have Johnny and Grimm just like, like button heads and like, and they're trying to keep them like, everybody calm down. That was great. That's what I want to see for 2 hours. I didn't need everything else.
just what
they should have made a short film.
Be happy.
They should make. I don't know. They're never going to do this, but if you did, it would be pretty cool. Just make a couple short films. See what people like. Have people vote. Do you like this one? Do you like this one? Do you like this one?
I mean, if I...
Then go with that direction.
Yeah, if I had my way, they would just call Disney like Sony did and be like, please help us.
Okay, so to that point, Simon Kinberg has denied the reports. Bryan Singer has quote-unquote confirmed that there are talks of a crossover between the X-Men and Fantastic Four.
There's been... They said when they first announced this movie, they said that they... quote unquote exist in the same universe, but that they wouldn't be crossing over. It like I get that the Fantastic Four and the X-Men meet a lot in the comic books, and like there's a famous Fantastic Four versus the X-Men book, but that is the most unnecessary crossover.
Also, like, which cast would you be blending?
That's the other thing that's super it would be super confusing, because the X-Men right now is in the 80s.
Yeah.
We're taking place in the
1980s. So
you'd have to bring back, like...
all these people who are...
Here's why I would say, please don't even think about that if you're the studio or if you're anyone else. Because, okay, here you have something that is... We talked about X-Men's going well. Here you have a property that everyone agrees should be going well, but it isn't. So to now mesh something that's terrible and with something that's good, just to try to make something, please don't.
Also, their tones are just so different. And like,
well, I don't even know what this movie's tone is at the end of the day.
I guess you would have to use these four, this four cast. And so you'd be putting like Miles Teller. Oh my gosh, this is like a really weird image.
James McAvoy.
Just give it back to Marvel. Marvel's going to wait a decade and then introduce Fantastic Four into their universe, and everything's going
to
be okay.
Well, I think at this point they have till 2021 or 23 to before the rights are up.
Yeah, I'm saying just give it back. Like, they'll buy it. Like, here's the thing. Right now, if I'm Fox, this is what I would bring to the table. Fox really wants to do an X-Men TV show. They've been trying to do it for years. Marvel has the TV rights to the X-Men, and they're not going to let them do it. I can't imagine why they would, because the two companies are not happy right now. So if you're Fox, with this movie tanking, go to Disney and say, we want our X-Men TV show, which could be good. I'll give them that. It could be good. We want our X-Men TV show. You can have Fantastic Four back, which Disney wants because they tried to get Galactus back. They were trying to make a deal to Galactus for Avengers. Give them Fantastic Four back. That way Marvel can have full rights to the Skrulls, and they can have full rights to Silver Surfer and all of these things. And then Fox can just keep the X-Men in their own separate little universe, and that's it. Like, everybody makes out better for it, and... the Fantastic Four, we're not worried about, like,
we're gonna call,
what would the sequel to this be?
And we're going
to
call the agencies. We're going to call the studio heads. Let's make this happen. We got to call the lawyers. All right. Is there anything else that you guys want to discuss about Fantastic Four? I mean, again, we could talk about box office numbers. Obviously very low. Came in at 26 point something for the opening weekend.
There were some cool, like, little Easter eggs in there.
There's a few.
They like the Hank, not Hank Azaria, Dan Castellaneta at the beginning, talking about, like, what are you working on? Your flying car?
Yes.
They're talking about the Fantastic Car, which is really what it's called.
The garage that they were in was from Back to the Future.
Was it really?
Yeah. That's what I read.
So, interesting.
We're going to go with that.
They had the white suits that, like, was, like, very much the design that they, like, wear with the, when they're in the Future Foundation. They have those white uniforms. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was a cool little
thing. What was the lab coat thing?
They actually wear lab coats?
Yeah.
I thought that was just a joke. I mean, it didn't...
Well, it said, like, two or three times, and I was just like, is this a failing joke, or is this something I'm just missing?
What was the joke? I don't even remember it.
Michael B. Jordan or Johnny Storm.
Two people different said it.
Oh,
it was said twice.
I didn't even catch the second one.
The first one was said by Ben.
But what was said?
Oh, it was Ben.
Yeah.
You're right.
Who, like, walked in and was like, they actually wear lab coats here.
Oh, okay.
Or something. And then later on, it was, I think, Johnny Storm who was like, but I'm not wearing a lab coat.
Oh, yeah.
Something. Like, it was mentioned. It was something that was very, like, poignant. And they said it. They focused in on the line twice. And I was like, what am I missing? Like, is this an Easter egg? I was like, is this an Easter egg or is this like going to have a payoff? Because it didn't. So I thought maybe you could help me. But no, it was just bad.
Fair enough. So Zach, I kind of want to leave this on a better note. And so IGN did a 13. Wait,
before we leave on a better note, I have one big gripe with this movie.
Go ahead.
That I've been saving because it is like the one thing that maybe could have like redeemed part of it in my eyes, and just like the fact that it's not there makes me as a fan this like who do you think you are, movie? No Stan Lee.
Oh, yes.
This is the first Marvel property I can even think of.
No end credits, no Stan Lee.
I don't need an end credits. That's Marvel Studios' game. You don't need it. That's fine. But people are like, oh, well, they had a lab tech named Stan. No. Especially with a movie that have like questionable quality, and you think that you are the one to just not include Stan Lee when every other movie does.
Maybe Stan Lee was like, mm-mm.
There's been no report of that.
And like, I get that that's like a minor thing, and like, some people really don't like it because it takes you out of the movie for a second. But that's where a tail credit scene could have been fun, is just like, that's like a thing now. Like, it's just, that's what you do with a Marvel property. You put Stan Lee in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go with Stan Lee. It was just like, in my mind, this is what happened. They were like, Stan Lee, come be a part of this giant mess that we're making. Yeah. And Stan Lee was like, mm. And I just like walked away.
Even Daredevil like put him on a poster in the background as like Officer of the Month. Like, you could do something.
Maybe it's in the footage. We just didn't see it. Maybe it's like the alternate ending.
Yeah.
Fail.
Yeah, to be fair, I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't fully paying attention to this movie. It was that boring. It was that boring.
I tried to look it up online to see if anybody else had like spotted it. He's not in there. Stan, like the lab tech named Stan was there supposedly.
We'll search, maybe.
IGN came out with 13 comics to restore your faith in Fantastic Four. And Zach, I want to know how you agree with these.
Somebody is right. He wasn't in Days of Future Past.
Oops. Okay.
But he was in X-Men at some point, I think.
Hopefully.
Was he not? Am I completely off base? Sorry.
Fox just hates Stan Lee in that case. Maybe. That would be interesting.
Still upset me.
The new Fantastic Four released 1989 to 1990. Do you know that one?
You know, remember off the top of your head this obscure title.
In 1989, I was 2.
Well, I understand that, but perhaps you've gone back and read these comics. Which, by the way, for those of you who follow...
Oh, I thought it was a TV show I'd never heard about.
No.
No, a book. Okay, sorry.
These are strictly comics.
Okay.
And by the way, I can provide the link. Sarah will tweet it out.
No, I will.
That's an inside joke because Sarah doesn't have Twitter. The comic is called number 12 is 1234, released 2001 to 2002.
Memorable title there.
I can tell you I probably read very few of these, if any.
Okay.
I have most of the Fantastic Four stuff I read is them like when they cross over into Avengers or crossover books.
Fair enough. Well, I'll give the top three and people at home can look up the rest. Number three is called Unthinkable, released in 2003.
Cool.
Number two is called Run, released in 2012. And then the Galacticus trilogy, released in 1966, is considered the best one. According to IGN.
Interesting, and that is why Disney wants Galactus. Just pointing it out there.
There you go. Right. Anything else? Closing thoughts? Anything that we might have missed? I mean, there's so much to talk about with this movie. Not a lot of it good.
Saying this movie was a waste of my time.
It was a short amount of time, though, thankfully.
Did you guys read the Max Landis... script pages that he posted?
I only saw the images, so I could, you know, it was so small that I couldn't like read it.
I read it. He leaked, for those of you who don't know, Max Landis, who wrote Chronicle, tweeted out the first four pages of a Fantastic Four screenplay that he wrote. Nobody knows where he, like, why he wrote it. It seems like he probably just is a fan. I think he's just a fan of the Fantastic Four and
wrote it
to write it, which is like, that's what you want, is like a guy. And it's basically they're in the four of them. It opens on the four of them as a team, getting in a space shuttle in a barn somewhere. And the FBI is like, you can't just do this. You can't just launch into space by yourselves. Like, there are laws about this. And Reed's just like, they're over a speakerphone, and he's like, I'm sorry, but we have to do this.
I'm sorry, but I'm pushing the button.
And
stand back.
It's really cute. It's a fun way to open it. But like, people are saying like, this is like in horrible taste, especially with everything going on, for the writer of Josh Trank's first movie to tweet out what he basically is, whether he meant it to be this or not, is basically saying, this is my better version of Fantastic Four.
Here's the thing, I mean, Max is very vocal. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. I think, yes, part of it was that he wanted to get some press out of it for himself, especially with American Ultra coming out soon, which is his movie. And you know what? I think in some ways he was supporting his friend Josh.
Yeah, I'm sure that in the next 3 weeks there might be a GoFundMe pop up. The next Fantastic Four made by, but
it'll be the. It needs a new name, though.
Yeah, just swaying the publicity, making it keep going. Who knows? I think overall, the person that this film hurts the most is Trank.
Yeah.
But fans alike as well.
I mean, we'll see. Here's the thing.
Fans have a lot of things that they can flock to.
I saw enough of something that I liked in those last, like in that last scene, that said that if you gave this to a good writer and director team, that there could be a good movie. So, despite all of my rantings today, I would come back to see the sequel.
And so would Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
Just like in Rise of the Silver Surfer.
That's really my big thing. For a lot of people were not happy with me saying that it should go back to Marvel. They're like, not everything needs to go back to Marvel. I wanted to go back not as much for Fantastic Four to be in the MCU as much as I want Doom. A good version of Doctor Doom, who should be the scariest villain in like superhero lore, because he's just incredibly smart. He's not a weird planet thing.
Yes, he is. He's a giant ball of mean energy.
With undefined powers.
With a mummy coke thing.
I would love to see some of the MCU heroes have to battle a guy like that. Like a foreign diplomat who's amazingly intelligent. That's a good villain.
Fair enough. And there's a... You know what? This is going to be the strangest thing for me to end on, but there was a great article on TechCrunch about how companies value growth and how basically if they get bogged down by fear and these weird projections, it's a really good article, they ultimately fail. And so in this scenario, I draw a lot of parallels to that article of, you know, when you make a movie just to make a movie instead of being like, hey, we can make a good movie, you're not going to make a good movie.
That's a good point. I agree.
So, I'll share that one, too. Sarah Stratton, last thoughts for you.
Don't tweet things about...
That's why Sarah doesn't have a Twitter, because she would tweet the wrong things.
Yeah. Be careful what you tweet.
Be careful what you tweet. At home. It might destroy the rest of your life and cost people millions of dollars. If you saw this movie... I hope that the actors were not spoiled for you. I hope that superhero movies in general were not spoiled for you. Sometimes you just got to throw in a really bad one, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you can't hit everyone. And
yeah.
It's just unfortunate
this
because
just
I did
want... with a good cast and with technologies, there could still be bad movies. I don't know.
Yeah,
I appreciate the good ones.
I wanted... to go see him. I was rooting for this movie. I really was. And I never want to go in a movie and be like, okay, this is going to be garbage. I want to prove people wrong.
Yeah, we're fans of movies. Like, if we come off as, like, the angry, like, I get that, like, today I played the role of the angry nerd, but I wanted this to be good. I went in with low expectations because of everything I'd heard, but I wanted this movie to be good. I always want the movie to be good. I'm usually the voice of, like, no, well, it was good for all these reasons.
This has a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's... I mean, what's a shitty movie? Whatever shitty movie you can think of off the top of your head, that probably has a 14. Okay? That's saying something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I'm curious, because again, like giving it 1 out of 10 is yeah. not fair. I wouldn't put it that low, but that's Rotten Tomatoes is not that.
And there's also a difference between, like, there's movies that are action movies that are like, oh, that movie's awful, but I love it. Like, a lot of people...
They will still have, like, a 22.
Yeah. But this movie's like, ugh. This is bad. And I can't love it when it goes on television.
I feel like the difference is, like, you want to talk about bad superhero movies that, like, look at Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin, as insane as it is, that is a fun movie to watch. I went to a movie night recently with, like, a whole bunch of people, and we all watched Batman and Robin. We had a great time.
Maybe if you get drunk,
yeah,
that helps.
Yeah, but like it was. But this movie, I don't think I could watch and like have fun with. It's not. It doesn't do that full circle thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
It's just. Yeah. You've heard our pieces.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for joining us yet on another Anatomy of Movie. Sometimes we like the movie, sometimes we don't. But overall, this movie, not many people like. I'm glad that we. You know, I'd love to.
There are people out there, and stay strong for what you like.
If you, you know, let us know in the comments below. We appreciate the ones that have kind of been chatting in the live session, letting us know if you've liked it. But, you know, now that we're on demand, feel free to write in your comments as well. It'll be interesting. By the way, another interesting weird thing, the score was, half of it was done by Philip Glass. Kind of cool.
Yeah, and I like Philip Glass. Like, I'm guessing he didn't do the theme.
I guess
it's the theme
not.
Was the most generic. Like, listen to this. Yep. It is the most generic. Hey, this is a superhero movie. Tune in.
That's right. And you can follow Sarah Stretton on Twitter by using the hashtag Sarah Stretton. Get a Twitter. All right, Zach Wilson, where can the people find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at @ThatZachWilson, @ZachWilson, and a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. If you are a Marvel fan, tune in the fall. We're going to be talking. I'm going to be talking to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And you can follow us here at Movie Anatomy for Anatomy of Movie, at The Popcorn Talk for Popcorn Talk, and we've got a whole slew of amazing shows here on the Popcorn Talk Network. For example, Sarah Stretton's box office breakdown. So this Monday and every Monday she'll be talking box office numbers.
This Monday we'll be talking about Straight Outta Compton.
That's right. And we've got Marvel movie news, DC movie news, Jedi Alliance, Schmoes Knows, Meet the Movie Press, Profiles, Cosplay Coach, and so many others that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But tune in for all of them. And speaking of Straight Outta Compton, we down the pipeline for us, we've got The Gift, we've got American Ultra, we've got Man from U.N.C.L.E., we've got Straight Outta Compton, so many. And to tout my horn, I'm going to be doing an NWA versus Public Enemy debate today on BlackHollywoodLive.com. No, I'm not black, but we'll see how this goes. I'm defending Public Enemy.
Good luck.
Lord help us all.
No comment.
Bye for now.
No comment.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.